Hi, Spring Fans. I'm having a hard week. My 81-year-old father passed away on Wednesday, December the 11th, 2019, at 5:45 p.m. And I've thought about him every minute since. I vacillate between joy and relief that his long, painful, horrific battle with end-stage liver failure is finally over. And an aching heartbreak. I'm gonna miss him. He was a really, really nice person. He was curious, always on to the next adventure, one way or another. When I grow up, I hope that I am like my father. He taught me a lot, and he showed me that nice people don't have to finish last. I struggle talking about him. I want to hear his laughter. He was a nice person. He was funny. He knew how to tell and take a joke. He was kind. He never had much, but he'd share it if he had it. He made friends of all stripes in his life. My father, Clark Long, had the same name as his father. Most in my dad's life just called him Bud. I have the same birthday, January 31, as my father dad did. I wonder how many years will pass, how many birthdays will come and go before I stop welling into tears just thinking about him. I weep for him. I wonder if he was at peace. I'm 35. My dad was 81. He was 46 when I was born. In the scheme of things, I didn't even have the privilege of knowing one of the two most important adults in my entire life for even half of his life. So I'd give anything to have him call me again. He used to call me, but sometimes he wasn't great at the time zone calculations. So he'd call me, and sometimes it'd be the middle of the night, and I'd have some of the best conversations I've ever had with anybody. With my dad, who was just happy to talk to me. I didn't have the heart to tell him that it was 4 in the morning or 3 in the morning, wherever I was. Sometimes he'd figure it out. He'd ask which city I was in, and I'd tell him, and he's, he started to remember some of the time zones because I go to these cities a lot. I go to a lot of different cities. He's gone. Finally, I hope he's at peace. He was suffering towards the end. Livers are important, it turns out. He's been in hospital or skilled care nursing homes for the last 2 months, for most of the last 2 months. I dearly wish he could have been at home, but he was bedridden. He was blind, a victim of a decades-long affliction of macular degeneration. He was sickly and unable to help himself, so we left him in the nursing homes. It was a race against the clock. All the doctors insisted he was too old for a liver transplant, so there was no cure. He had 3 obvious ways to go out of this world. He suffered from an internal bleed, I guess. He was bleeding from somewhere in his body. They couldn't find out where. They did all sorts of tests and endoscopies and colonoscopies and this and that. And after a year, we couldn't figure out where it was. So as time went on, he needed increasingly faster, more frequent blood transfusions. It got to the point in the end where every 3 to 4 days he needed a transfusion. He had an accrual of water, in the body, edema, basically from a congestive heart failure. Normally, the body evacuates liquid through the urine, but this wasn't working. So his legs and his arms, but first his legs, they would swell like tree trunks. Then his arms, his skin was paper thin. So thin, in fact, that the water started to leak from his arms. He just started, you know, leaking. It was weird. Eventually, the water worked into his lungs. And, you know, you don't want water in your lungs. You ever have a liquid that goes down the wrong pipe and your body throws itself into spasms as it desperately tries to evacuate the water? That wasn't your lungs. That wasn't even close to your lungs. It could eventually get to the lungs, though. So your body does everything it can to make you appreciate just how dangerous that situation you're in is. People sometimes get pulled up from the surf by lifeguards on the beach, dust themselves off, and feel okay. They walk away and only die, you know, a day or two later. They call it dry drowning. These people have gotten somehow the tiniest bit of water in their lungs, and you know, you can feel okay, and then it still takes you, it still kills you. So we didn't want that for Dad, but that was basically what was in store. Eventually the water got to his lungs. He felt like he was drowning, drinking water, having it go down the wrong pipe, and it lasted for days. We begged the hospital to ease his transition, give him morphine to relieve the blood pressure so he could breathe more readily. Hospice care finally came in. He decided he just wanted to get it over with, so he refused treatment and let the hospice care came in. They're not so much curative as palliative. They would administer morphine. There's a church, a member of the church that would come and visit him, you know, that kind of stuff. He eventually got enough of a morphine dose that he started to sleep, and he slept better, but there was still this ghastly death rattle, like a gurgle or something. Even when he slept, it was like he was aspirating water. It was haunting. I've canceled a ton of appearances this last few months. I've flown back to Los Angeles and spent as many of the weeks with him as I could. Each time, he'd tell me, "Don't worry about me." He insisted that he was at peace. He has religion, or had, I suppose, and you know, I hope it served him in the end when it most mattered. I'd never forgive myself to know that sweet old man was scared, and there's, you know, if there was anything I could have done about it, that would have been horrific. He wasn't alone. Like I said, I was there for a good many weeks, and he had his lovely wife, Kathy, and Troy, one of my older brothers, my elder half-brothers, by Dad, and Troy lives in the same city in Los Angeles. Troy is one of Dad's other sons, and Troy's been an absolute legend. I mean, he's just been on the ground fending off the grossly incompetent bureaucrats that seem to typify our day-to-day interactions with the hospitals and skilled nursing homes and veterans affairs and so on. Don't get me wrong, like, the doctors and the nurses and other support staff were absolutely in it because they cared and they did a good job, but somehow, somehow, the bean counters, the bureaucrats, managed to make our father's passing, already the single most traumatic experience of my short life, even more agonizing. I hope that one day, when I die, that I die quickly, or at least in Sweden. My dad didn't travel much. He served in the military in the 60s. And flew routes between Newfoundland and the United States. He'd crisscrossed the entirety of the continental U.S., even ventured into some of the, you know, neighboring countries, Canada and Mexico. But he never really saw Hawaii. He never left North America, right? In 2012, I changed that. I took him with me to J-Focus in Stockholm, Sweden. A great show. And to Spring I.O. in Madrid, Spain. These shows were back-to-back. And they're kind of early in the year, March or April maybe. So it was a really good opportunity to go. It wasn't too cold in Sweden. It wasn't too warm in Spain. And these were vastly disparate, blops on the map, right? Like, figured why not? Go see Northern Europe and Scandinavia. Go see Southern Europe and, you know, one trip. He loved it. We both did. We had a lot of fun. But it wasn't easy to travel for him, especially at the tender age of 76. He got traveler's diarrhea. He fell in a bathtub once. But we got to hang out. He told me stories. That was, bar none, one of my all-time favorite trips ever. I don't really have anything profound to offer here, my friends. I just really, really miss him. I feel grateful to know that he was around long enough to see me go off into the world, to make it on my own, to embrace a beautiful family, to, you know, maintain my health. He always knew and always said that I could do it if I just tried. And he was right. I regret that my own little girl, Kimley, won't get to continue to benefit from his considered wisdom. He was amazing, you know, and I, and then my sister, came into his life late in his life, in his late 40s. He was 46 when I was born. It was an extra opportunity, right? He wasn't expecting kids, and it was an opportunity that he relished. He never took us for granted. He was older, but that never stopped him from fishing with us, riding his bicycle with us, or taking us swimming, or playing Super Mario Brothers with us on the Nintendo. He had a big computer in the house when I was a child. It was for his business. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. Not everyone could afford a computer then. His poor business machine was my little playground. We had to reformat that thing so often because I'd do something stupid and put it into an inconsistent state and, you know, generally ruin the continuity of his digital operation. I also ruined one of his large laser printers once. He had a newfangled laser printer, black and white, of course, no color at that time, but, you know, I did something stupid. I don't know if I can admit it on this podcast. It was so dumb, but, you know, I always wondered, you know, why didn't he never really scolded me for that, right? Like, he was happy that I was learning to use a computer. He seemed to know it would be important. Later in my life, my parents, both of whom I love very much, separated. I went with my dad and my sister went with my mom. My dad and I, we didn't have much money, but we made it work, and in Los Angeles even. He'd take me to a bookstore called Barnes & Nobles. There's a Starbucks next door, an adjacent Starbucks, and I'd go in and buy a venti drip, which is a 20-ounce cup of American-style coffee. And it was like a buck. It was like nothing, right? And then I'd wander off with my pad of paper and clipboard in hand and go to the computer book section and just start reading them. We couldn't afford them. They were even more exorbitant than they are now. So I'd just sit there and write pages and pages of notes, and then I'd go home and try things out at home. You know, it's how I learned to write code. It's how I learned to program, to work with databases, to administer networks. I learned productivity software like WordPerfect and Ventura Publisher and Lotus 1-2-3. It's how I learned graphic software like Aldus PageMaker and Quark Express and Macromedia Freehand and Adobe Photoshop. It's amazing what you can do with a pad of paper and some free time and a few books, right? And I'd sit there on the floor with these books sprawled around me. I mean, it was clear I wasn't planning on buying a book. And the people at that bookstore, bless them, they never seemed to mind. They just seemed to know that this kid wasn't going to ruin their books, and he was very happy to be there. And they appreciated that, I think. My dad, he spoiled me, even though we were poor. I never, ever felt unloved. I never doubted that he cared, and I was absolutely sure that he was doing his best. And we were there for each other. My dad was a good person, and I hope that I can raise my kid half so well as he tried to raise me. I'd like to think he's okay, you know, finally able to breathe. I have asthma, so the idea of not being able to breathe is the stuff of nightmares. I'd like to believe that he's healthy and happy now. I'd like to know that he's finally been reunited with his mother and father and elder sister Sandra, who passed away in 2012. I hope he's happy, finally, surrounded by loved ones, able to see, able to breathe, able to move. I hope he's at peace. I love you, Dad. I'll miss you. Rest in peace. So, I suppose I'm gonna sit this week out, okay, my friends? I'll publish another episode next week. Yeah, let's do it next week. I have content for this week, but I, you know, just in honor of my dad.